Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're all clearing our throats. We're about ready for the program today. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. They're exhausted, frankly. 28 cookbooks published in 16 years. More on the way. That's over 12,000 original recipes tested and written, a million hours at the table, a billion hours on the cross trainer. Their titles include the 11-volume Ultimate Series Cooking Know-How, selected at the 2010 Paris Cookbook Show as the best book in the world for easy recipes. The one that we're talking about today, and we'll talk about anything you want, but it's this classic book called Ham, An Obsession with the Hindquarter. It's a book like no other. And we'll talk about ham, we'll talk about Easter dinner, whatever you want. You know, believe it or not, given how many calories they write about, they also write a monthly column on WeightWatchers.com, which I didn't even know. So we'll talk about that. They contribute regularly to Fine Cooking Magazine and Cooking Light. They've got a podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Well, Bruce and Mark, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you much.
You know, the podcast is fairly new. How's it going?
We started last September.
Right.
It's doing well.
To me, that's pretty
really
new.
Well. Yeah, okay.
Because you guys were on about that time, right?
Yeah, we had just started it.
We actually cook a recipe in real time on the podcast.
And so there's not a specific length of time for each show.
They range between 12 and 15 minutes. We actually have two that come out every week. On Tuesdays, we debunk a culinary myth.
Okay.
Every week, and
all
that's
right.
A really short one. And on Fridays, we cook through a recipe. Well, Mark does, and I kind of make fun of him and tell him what he's doing
Bruce
wrong.
Bruce judges how I cook one of
those. Remember that,
nice.
That Mark is the writer and I'm the chef.
Absolutely. Bruce Weinstein is the chef. Mark Scarborough is the writer. And 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Or you can tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop or go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. But email is good. voxpop@wamc.org.
Where's your Snapchat?
Just knock on the door and come in?
At this point, it's fine. I mean, we have a new control room, and as you can see, things are sort of up in the air here. We have a new phone system, hopefully it'll work today. It worked yesterday. I didn't. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to try out the new phone system. All right, so before we get started on whatever you guys want to talk about, a couple things. One, debunk a myth for me right now.
Right now? Well,
yeah.
Let's see. The one that's up on the that just went up recently on the podcast is that your tongue has four areas for tasting: sweet, sour, bitter. That's false.
Okay, that's a myth I never even heard.
Really?
So,
you didn't learn the tongue chart in elementary school with the
four quadrants?
Where you taste bitter here and salt there.
Our phone screener, Barb, says yes. Yeah,
okay, that's a total bogus.
Let's say
idea.
You get into some strange accident and some wild animal bites out half your tongue.
Yeah.
The remaining half of your tongue could still taste everything.
We know this because we found the protein that tastes sour, and we found it in every single part. Well, not we. Researchers have found it in every single part of your tongue.
Okay, just to be clear, you write a lot of books, but you really don't have a lab.
No.
Okay, good.
And then the other myth that went up last week is that jumbo shrimp really are jumbo. Those words, jumbo, medium, small, large, mean nothing when you buy shrimp.
The advertising copy.
It is advertising copy. So once
isn't there a shrimp council that would say, no, you can't do this?
Well, what the shrimp council says is that you need to label shrimp by how many there are per pound. So if you buy a bag of frozen shrimp, even if it's labeled jumbo or medium or large, it will say on there 15 to 18 per pound, 20 to 22 per pound. That's how the industry measures the size. How many per pound? Jumbo, medium is all just window dressing.
I just talked to SCUSA.
What?
SCUSA. Shrimp Council of the USA.
That's very funny. Is there such a thing?
No, I don't know.
We're
apartment 4G, New York City.
We're off to a bizarre start on the program. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough here. It's a Food Friday. The number to call is 800-348-2551. So we kidded at the beginning of the program about how many books you've written. But really, it's in the thousands now, right?
Yeah, we've written 30 books. Yeah.
And so what's new? What's coming?
What's coming on June 7th is a book called A La Mode.
Oh, yeah.
120 recipes in 60 pairings. Anyone up for some popcorn ice cream on some peanut brittle tart?
Mm. Well, that sounds good.
Doesn't that sound
that
good?
Sounds good. Like now, do you guys make ice cream?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, that's the job. We have to create the recipes, right?
Very first book in 1999 was the Ultimate Ice Cream Book, and it's still our best-selling book. People love ice cream.
They do love ice cream.
So we decided it was time to do another ice cream book.
You know, we've done some ice cream shows, and those who make ice cream are really passionate about making ice cream.
Well, hey, if you got an ice cream question, call in. We can answer it.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So the number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to line one, and Russ in Margaretville. Russ, you're on.
Hey. All right. Good afternoon. So I've got a question for you.
Okay.
How easy is it to wet cure one's own hams? And how good are the typical results? I mean, I've read where you can make your own, and it's almost always going to be better than anything you could buy in a store.
Okay.
Okay, so Bruce wants to answer that. But before he answers it, I want to say, Russ, that if you want to do this for Easter, you're late.
You're late.
Okay.
Because
you're late.
If you're going to take anywhere from a 5 to an 8-pound ham or a 10-pound ham, and you want to wet cure it, it's an easy process. We have a recipe in our ham book for it. You basically make a brine with salt and sugar and water and spices, and you submerge the ham in it. But the ham needs to be submerged for a couple of days. And then you need another 24 hours of soaking it in fresh water to then pull some of that salt back out. Now that you've cured it, you know it'll be too salty, so then you pull the salt back out. So it's a very easy process, but it does take time. And if you want to do it for this Easter, you're late, but you could do it for next weekend.
But let me say also, the other thing about curing your own ham is it's sometimes hard to find fresh hams. I'm assuming you have one or a source for one, right, Russ?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Because some people have a hard time tracking down fresh hams that aren't already cured, which is crazy to me because a big old fresh ham is about the best pork roast that you could ever eat. So,
and then you have a choice after you cure it of whether you want to smoke it or just braise it or even oven roast it.
Oh, braise it. Braise it in apple cider.
We have to talk about the braising process. Russ, do you have a follow-up?
No. I guess the only other question I'd have for you would be, is there a need to use, what do they refer to it as, pink salt or nitrates?
Yeah.
Or can you just use standard, you know, salt?
What's pink salt?
Pink salt is the nitrite preservatives that sometimes the brand name is called Instacure. You add it to your curing liquid, to your brine, and what it does is it keeps the meat pink when you cook it. So that's why processed meat is all pink, even though it's long cooked. But it also extends the shelf life. So if you plan on making a ham that you want to keep around for, you know, a month, then you need to use the pink salt.
But
if you're eating it on Sunday and then you're just having sandwiches all week, you don't need to. We don't use pink salt at home when we cure our meats.
And when we wrote this book, Ham and an Obsession with the Hindquarter, I took a trip down to Kentucky to a bunch of country ham makers, people who make American country hams, those really dry, salty hams. And not a single one of them uses pink salt.
Interesting.
They all just use kosher flaked salt, and that's it.
Yeah, pink salt is usually reserved for the city hams, the wet cured, which is what Russ was asking about. But to answer your question, Russ, no, you absolutely do not need to use it to have a perfectly delicious cured ham.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Hey, sure, Russ, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. So we have our ham. It's ready to go for Easter.
Okay.
Give us a simple, and we have this discussion every year. What do we do? How are we going to glaze this thing? Give us a good, simple suggestion that even a radio person can figure out.
You mean this is a cured ham? This
it's just ready
ham,
to go.
The spiral slicey, the
city cured,
as they call them, city hams.
It was our freebie at ShopRite.
Okay,
you hit a certain level and you get a free ham.
So let me put my South on because I am from the South.
Really? Where?
I'm from
Southern
Texas.
Connecticut?
No,
really?
I'm from Texas.
Okay.
So let me put my Texas on for a minute here and tell you that in Texas, what we glaze them with is Dr. Pepper.
You're kidding me.
No, of course not.
Dr. Pepper?
Of course. In fact, if you want to get fancy, you put a little of that dry powdered mustard in Dr. Pepper and you glaze it with
Now
that.
Wait, how much? 2, 3, 4 liters? How much do you need?
No, you take the Dr. Pepper, you boil it down to a syrupy stage in a saucepan, and then you just brush that all over the ham.
You're basically using Dr. Pepper syrup.
Yeah.
And if you can actually find that, you can use that.
But you don't need to. You can just boil down some Dr. Pepper until it gets kind of syrupy. And then put a little dry mustard in it, that dry mustard powder, and then mush it all over the ham, brush it on there as it bakes.
All right. I'm going to do it, and I will report back on
that. There you go.
All right?
Done. Well, we do have 5 other glazes in our book,
all right,
if you're interested.
All right, wow me here. Let's
see. Okay, well, I like the one that uses marmalade and bourbon.
All right,
good. A good thing.
Good. You had me
really
a bourbon.
Easy.
All right.
What about the one that uses mango chutney and orange juice concentrate? That's a
good
combination.
That sounds like a lot of work.
That's not a lot. It's a jar and a bottle.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not, you can't drink the bottle.
No, you can drink the bourbon once you open it.
You make, when okay. you drink the Dr. Pepper,
then
too.
Either you, well, and you could put the bourbon in the Dr. Pepper, too.
Now, that would be a sin. Where I come from, that's a sin.
That is, I find it a sin to put ice in bourbon. So
you see, you're wrong. Now, we've done shows about that. Now, obviously, you know about ham, but you don't know from bourbon.
No, I don't think I'm wrong.
The thing is, an ice cube is fine. The purist will tell you, even in a single malt scotch, a little ice cube.
You need that water to sort of open it up.
Okay.
It needs to open it up.
3 points for Bruce, no points for Mark. We're going to
take
a break.
Branch water.
All right, branch water, yes. All right. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll take a break. We'll be right back on a Food Friday.
Support for WAMC comes from Field Goods, delivering local produce every week from small farms all year long, pickups at workplaces and other locations, including all Hewitt's Garden Center locations. Field-goods.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts. A food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, European frame designs, and customized eyewear, eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. And Mass Match, a locally owned dating service connecting both straight and gay singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com.
Oh, the things you learn here on Food Friday. We're joined today by Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, and the book that we're discussing, but they have so many. But the one that is in front of me now is Ham, An Obsession with the Hind Quarter. We'll take your calls on just about anything. But if you got a ham question, that's good, too. Let's go over to Lou in Altamont. Lou.
Yes. In the world of chocolate, you have what you refer to as baking chocolates, cooking chocolates.
Yes.
The sweet. Semi-sweet and bittersweet.
Yes.
How can you tell if they've gone past their eating date based on something other than the expiration date? In which case, I'm looking at a 2-year-old chocolate, but frankly, bittersweet chocolate tastes like bittersweet chocolate.
If it's been stored in a relatively dry place, it should be absolutely fine. It may get some of that white film on it, which they call the bloom, and the chocolate may bloom a bit, which is a bit of the, what is that?
The fat. It's the fat rising.
The cocoa butter. Right, rising up. That doesn't affect the chocolate if you're going to melt it. It actually doesn't affect it really if you're going to eat it. It makes the chocolate inside a little grainier if you're just going to eat it. But I don't. Do you know anything about expiration dates?
No,
I think chocolate kind of lasts.
Chocolate will last.
Like Nefertiti's.
Especially the darker the chocolate, the longer it will last. But here's the other thing. The only time chocolate can really go bad is if it was kept in too warm a place, the cocoa fat in the chocolate could get rancid, as all fats can.
Yeah.
You'll know that. When you take one little bite, you know when something's rancid. And it's almost hard to even describe a rancid taste. You just know it. It's off.
It's accurate.
Sour. Yeah. But as long as it tastes good to you, there's nothing in it that can hurt you.
Yeah, I don't think so. A milk chocolate can go rancid more quickly. But if you're just talking baking chocolate.
Yeah, if you're talking about bittersweet, semi-sweet, then you'll have no problem with that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. So basically what I've learned here is in my bunker, which we have for the end of the world, it up with plenty of dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Sure. And bourbon.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Okay.
And bourbon.
Right. And Dr. Pepper.
And ice.
Kathy in Seward, New York. You're on. Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question. It's sort of ham related because it's from a pig. I don't think it's the hind quarter.
Uh-oh.
It's a sirloin, pork sirloin roast.
Yum.
All right. Yum.
And I purchased this, and it's got all this string around it.
Yeah.
You know, do I bake it, roast it, whatever, with the string on, or do I take that off before I put it in the oven?
You want to keep that string on it because the butcher who sold it to you or the butcher in the store before they put it in the case put the string around it to hold its shape and keep it together. It's possible that there are 3 or 4 chunks of sirloin meat in that being held together to form one big roast.
Okay.
So that's one reason they might do the string. The other reason is just that it was a big unwieldy shape, and by tying it all together, so you don't want to untie it or it will fall apart on you. You could roast it, you could braise it, but I think you do good just roasting it.
Well, that sounds good. And let me go forward from there.
Sure.
I can remember years ago my mother used to get things called picnic ham.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not
true. And they were
ham.
Also in string, I think.
Hmm. If it was boneless. Yeah, if it was boneless, they would have again tied it up to hold its shape together.
Okay.
But a picnic ham is not really a ham.
What is a picnic ham?
It's the front shoulder. The ham is the back.
Technically, a ham, right, is the back end of a pig.
The hind quarter.
The hind quarter.
But wait, picnic, it'll taste the same, though, right?
Well,
no.
The front shoulders are fattier, so it's good. The picnic ham is going to be a little more luscious, and the back, the ham in the back is going to be meatier and chewier.
Is a picnic ham the same thing as a Boston butt?
The entire front shoulder is broken into two pieces. The picnic ham is the lower end with a bit of the arm shank, and then the top end closer to the neck is the Boston butt.
Which is confusing because they call it the butt, but it's from
the front shoulder.
Well, Boston's a little off.
Ooh, wait.
I'm sorry.
Slow down. What was that?
The Boston butt.
From the front shoulder?
Yeah.
The front shoulder contains two pieces, the picnic ham and the Boston butt.
Good grief.
Yeah, tell me about it.
It's very confusing.
Well, good luck, Kathy.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So picnic hams. So people would get very fatty hams and bring them on picnics back in the day?
I don't know why they call them picnic hams. But for some reason, a lot of it now is just sold as pork shoulder, right?
As pork shoulder. I know where in the local Stop and Shops where we are, those picnic hams are always on sale for like 99 cents
really?
A pound. And it's crazy. So I'll get one home and with our pressure cookers and our pressure cooker book, we can have pulled pork in 45 minutes.
That's pretty cool.
Wow, that is amazing.
You can't hardly beat that.
Let's go over to line three. Rachel on the New York State Thruway. I hope you are hands-free and safe, Rachel.
I am, Ray. Nice to hear talk to you again.
You are on.
Cool. Hey, I'm curious to talk to the gentleman or ask them some questions about Spanish ham.
Okay.
I lived and worked in Spain for a number of years. Spaniards really know how to do pork.
They do.
And I've had a hard time in the United States finding something that's even comparable to a good jamón serrano, a good, like, pata negra, black
pepper. Yeah, it's in the book. That's
very
what's
hard. On the cover
to
of the book.
To find Ibericos is difficult here in the States. I mean, you can do it, but you need to find a really high-end butcher. When I've looked around for Ibericos, even in New York City, I have to be looking hard. Now, that's
especially the pata negros.
Yeah, exactly, but the Ibericos. But if you look around online, I know plenty of places that will ship you pieces even of the Iberico, not even the whole thing. I mean, they'll ship you the whole thing too, but they'll ship you pieces of it from Spain. And it's a nice way to get it. But
it lasts forever. Even if you got a whole one, on the cover of our book is a whole one that the Spanish government sent us when we were testing recipes for this book. And it lasted for months. And we would go to dinner parties, and I would slice up a kilo of Iberico. He has a house gift. But, Ray, this stuff is like $200 a pound.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The reason I was curious is because we do use La Tienda, right?
Yeah, La Tienda is good.
And we like them, and we do. We get my mother will often get us one for Christmas every year, and the whole family comes in. We slice it up. We keep it on the counter. We've got the jamonera and the special ham knife and the whole thing. I just wonder whether there was a better way to do it.
Well, let me tell you this. Have you ever considered, instead of using a Spanish ham, buying an American country ham and using it like a Spanish ham? Do you know these country hams? Like, sometimes they're called Smithfield hams, but Smithfield is a brand and of one of them. They're highly salty, dry-cured hams. The best in the whole world, in my opinion, comes from a lady in Kentucky named Colonel Nancy Newsom, and she is Colonel Newsom.
Okay.
And Colonel Newsom runs Nancy Newsom's hams.
And Nancy Newsom wears a mink coat down to the floor while she's curing her hams.
She does.
Of course she does.
She's completely Southern Gothic.
What Colonel doesn't, really?
And I love her hams so much that there is an international ham museum in Spain, and I got Nancy's ham in that museum, and it is the only American ham that hangs in that museum is one of Nancy's hams.
I love this. Is it N-E-W-S-O-M-E?
Yes, Nancy Newsom.
There
and it's,
you go.
And if you look her up, she's in Princeton, Kentucky. And I tell you what, her hams are unbelievable. Now, there's whole ways you cook American country hams that you have to pull the salt out, et cetera. But you can actually just slice them like Iberico's and eat them straight on.
They're a little salty.
They are salty.
But their flavor is so deep and intense and cheese-like.
They get, they actually get the Roquefort bacillus to bloom in the ham.
Wow.
So you have this blue cheesy taste to the American country hams when they're artisanally done. They're amazing.
Whoops, I think we lost Rachel. But thank you for the call, Rachel. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 here on a Food Friday with Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. Now, you know, I don't know where you find the time. How the in blazes did you find that there's an international ham museum in Europe?
It's in Spain. It's in Madrid. Madrid.
How did you do that?
Well, just because I'm curious, Ray. I'm a curious guy.
You went to the ham museum.
No, I have actually never set foot in the ham museum, but I know the people who run it.
Because you have to talk to these people when you're writing a book about it, right?
Well, okay. All right,
a truly gothic moment, when Nancy Newsom went and presented her ham in Madrid to the museum, I have seen pictures of her standing there in her mink coat with her thick Kentucky accent, the colonel standing there presenting her ham. It's quite a thing.
The mind boggles. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here, and we're talking anything you want to talk about food-wise. They have written 30 books on different topics and thousands of recipes. The one we're discussing at this point is Ham and Obsession with the Hindquarter. I turned it to page 42. I'm not sure if I'm saying this right. Ham tagine. Oh my God! What a recipe! So it's Moroccan. It's a Moroccan braise.
Yeah, which is really not
cool.
Not kosher.
It's not cool because it's certainly not
it's halal. It's not halal.
To put a ham in your tagine.
Most people in Morocco would not be eating ham.
Okay.
But I decided to throw caution to the wind and create this North African spiced braise. You know, with lots of cumin and coriander and ginger and fresh ham. This uses a fresh ham. As Mark said, sometimes it's hard to find fresh ham. But you can find it. It's like the best pork roast you've ever had.
Oh, my God.
This is a really cool recipe. Chickpeas in there and parsnips and carrots. And that looks like one to make, although it looks difficult.
No, it's really not that difficult.
Now, you say that about every recipe, all right? No, it's easy to do. All right, fine. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Jack in Red Hook. Jack, you're on.
I've got a quick question.
Sure.
If I buy individual strip steaks or ribeyes, can I age them in my refrigerator?
No, it doesn't really work that way. Aging on the whole animal, there's two kinds of aging. There's the dry aging, like when you go into Whole Foods, you see those racks of steaks that have not been cut up. And then there's wet aging, when meat is packed at the slaughterhouse and cryovacked and shrink-wrapped, and they let it age that way. That way has to be, it's cryopacked, so there's no oxygen in there. So it's aged anaerobically. When it's dry aged, you kind of need the entire rack so that you get a crust on the outside. You have too much surface to too much meat if you have individual steaks. If you want aged steaks, you should buy aged steaks.
Very good. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Okay, now take me into this aging process because it's always been mysterious to me. You know, ordinarily, I think you leave something out and it goes bad.
You basically are controlledly letting it go bad.
But it's in a controlled environment.
I mean, if you go to Whole Foods, you'll see in their aged meat case, it's a case and it's temperature controlled and it's moisture controlled and it's a very controlled environment. They're not just going and hanging it out in the basement. And here's, you know, you said that you had the book in front of you before, and I could see the back of it. You had it up against the mic.
Yeah.
And what cracks me up is that no one has ever said before that a book on ham would be side-splitting humor. But we have some pretty funny stories in this book, including a story of a guy that ran a deli in Massachusetts who said he was French, and he grew up in a family where they all made their own prosciuttos, and he was going to teach us how to do it for the book. So I had to bring him a fresh ham, and he told me to bring him a wooden champagne crate, And I said, does it have to be that? He said, no, but I want it,
okay.
The champagne crate. And he said, you have to bring me a bottle of cognac. I said, is that for curing the ham? No, I just like cognac.
Payment.
So in anyway, the point was he took this ham and salted it and shoved it in his basement in an uncontrolled environment. And he let it sit there for 4 months. And when we came back to look at it 4 months later, it was a crawling insect festival.
Oh, God. See, that's what... Yeah.
It must be a controlled environment.
You have to control. We for my birthday last year, we went down to the city of New York City, specifically because I wanted to go to this restaurant that makes, what is it, 48-day age short ribs?
Something like that.
Something like that.
Oh, cool.
And honestly, these beef short ribs tasted like cheese. Honestly, they were just on the verge of
they
being
were so minerally
crazy.
And then they cooked them sous vide style, which is cooking them shrink-wrapped in plastic and then put in warm water.
Right.
So they were cooked at about 135 degrees for 4 days.
If you liked stinky cheese, you would love this.
And when did you get out of the hospital?
I'm fine.
It was okay. All right, back to the phones we go. Joanna in South Hadley, Mass., you're on.
Hi there. Well, I live in the Pioneer Valley, which is also known as the asparagus capital of the world, or used to be. About 25 years ago, there was a big fungus outbreak that pretty much wiped out our asparagus crop. And then I know there were some growers that did kind of hybridizing to get new strains. I'm not so thrilled with some of the asparagus I buy locally now, so I want to know where you source your asparagus, and also if you have a particular recipe about asparagus you want to share.
Well, first, let me remind everyone that Mark and I do not own a restaurant. We are full-time food writers, so where I source my asparagus is either from my friends' gardens. I have some great friends in Litchfield who let me come and raid their gardens, and another guy in our town in Colebrook that lets me do that. Otherwise, I've got a Whole Foods or I've got a Stop and Shop, and I get my asparagus there. But we have a recipe in our book, Vegetarian Dinner Parties, that I am so in love with. I take radicchio leaves, you know, that bitter red lettuce, I braise them in a combination of red wine and red wine vinegar, just for about 3 minutes a leaf to wilt them. And then I grill the asparagus spears.
And basically vaguely pickled.
Yeah,
vaguely.
And then I wrap the pickled radicchio leaves around the asparagus and shave Parmesan over the whole thing and lots of cracked black pepper. It's an amazing dish.
It does sound good.
Gosh, it's so good. It just
sounds wonderful. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks, Joanna. We appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551 on a Food Friday. Ray Graff here, joined today by Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein. And the new book is out in the summer.
That's out June 7th, A La Mode.
Okay. And there's another one in the works.
We have
too,
another
right?
book coming out in November.
There's two more in the works.
The November book is kind of crazy because, you know, the last three books Mark and I wrote have been picked up by QVC.
Right.
And we always sell out.
That's right. The last time you were here, you had just been on QVC.
We're going to be on again May 4th with A La Mode.
That's crazy.
And so the last time we were on there, today's special value was a Vitamix, you know, one of those turbo blenders that can grind wheat.
Right.
And Mark looked at me in the green room and said, wait a second. They just sold 60,000 of these blenders today, and look what it can do. We could put wheat berries in that and have flour, and why can't you throw sugar and eggs and chocolate in that and have whole wheat brownie mix?
That's right.
And then why can't we put eggs and milk and sugar and chocolate and have chocolate pudding? And so we did, and we tried it. So that's the new book.
Okay.
The Turbo Blender Dessert Revolution.
But so basically all your ideas happen when you're drunk, is what you're saying. Right?
Hey, I was on air.
We were on QVC. We were
on
drunk.
I was on QVC.
Well, maybe
okay.
a little bit.
Well, you seem sober enough now. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mike in Altamont. Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'm a big fan of carbonara, and I know that the really good ones, when I get them, it has a lot to do with that pancetta that's in there. What's the big difference between pancetta and, say, a thick-cut bacon?
Okay. The number one difference between pancetta and bacon is smoke. Pancetta is a cured pork belly that is not smoked. Bacon is a cured pork belly that is smoked. And the other thing about really good carbonara, it's going to surprise people, there should be no cream in it. Carbonara is a creamy dish, but there's no cream. There's butter and there's pancetta, and then the pancetta renders all of its lovely fat out into the butter. And then you mix in some beaten egg and a little bit of the pasta water, and that creates a rich, creamy sauce, and then lots of Parmesan cheese. So you have this almost egg and pancetta custard-coated pasta with Parmesan.
Oh, I love pancetta too. It is one of my
things.
It is
the key to really
and
good carbonara.
Lots of black pepper for me. It just needs
tons of it. If you used a thick cut bacon to do it, it would work, but it wouldn't have the same flavor.
It would work, but you're going to have a smoky flavor to your carbonara, which isn't a bad thing, but it won't be traditional.
Yeah, I mean, I like smoke too, but it's not the traditional carbonara.
All right, Mike. Well, goodbye. Thank you. Have a great weekend. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Let's take a short break. We'll be back on a Food Friday with the home stretch and Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings, indoors or out, at the Curtis House, with 3 rooms available, or at a variety of venues around the area, gloriosaco.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here. It is a Food Friday, and we're joined by authors and cooking experts Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, and they've written a couple more books. By the time they're here next time, there'll be 7 or 8 more books. You also write for WeightWatchers.com every month, and I didn't know that.
We have the longest-running named column on Weight Watchers. We've been doing it for like 12 years.
Really?
Listen, yeah. I set this career up right, that I have books on ham and ice cream, and then the other half of the career, I cycle them into Weight Watchers and then cycle them back out to ham and ice cream.
I mean, you write a book about a vegetarian dinner party, and then you hide the ham books, all right? The vegetarians are coming over.
But we made it very clear when we wrote the Vegetarian Dinner Party book, which, by the way, since we saw you, won the IACP, the International Association of Culinary Professionals People's Choice Award.
Nice.
That book, we made it very clear, we're not vegetarians.
Right.
But we wrote that book because there's so much you can do with vegetables that are so fabulous and amazing that we wanted to take a break from big, sweaty hunks of meat.
But, there you go. But, I mean, the thing is, it's kind of makes sense for some people who normally are carnivores.
Yeah.
And they might have a high standard to get dishes that'll really satisfy anyway.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Right, because I do not want to eat brown rice and limp, mushy greens. That's disgusting. That's not dinner.
All right, let's go back to the phones and to Glenna in Dalton, Mass. Glenna.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just bought a ham, and I'm concerned about the salt. Is there a way of soaking it to get excess salt out of it?
What kind of ham?
What kind of ham is it?
Oh, let me see.
Let me ask you this.
Is it
spiral sliced or is it whole?
No, it's not a spiral.
It's whole.
No.
As long as it's a whole
shank portion ham.
Yeah. Okay, as long as it's whole, you could take it out of its wrapper and you could put it in a big stock pot of water in your refrigerator for 24 hours, and that will draw some of the salt out of it.
Some. Not all.
But it will.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Great.
Thanks a lot for the call.
And
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
I should say one other thing about a stock pot. Some people don't, Bruce, they just have Dutch ovens. They don't have a giant stock pot.
Yeah.
So, of course, you can always, if the weather cooperates and it's cool this weekend, you can always fill a cooler with water and put the ham in it and keep it in your garage as long as you're down low enough below 40 degrees.
It has to be below 40. So you could also fill the cooler with water and then put ice in it. And that'll keep the temperature.
And then when you're done, you drink the water.
Oh, ham water.
Let's go over to Jeff and Fonda. Jeff, you're
up. Hi. I'm calling about beef brisket specifically.
Okay.
I got a smoker for Christmas.
Lucky man.
And yeah. And then everybody said, all right, now get to work. So I was put on tap for Easter, and I talked to my father-in-law, and we wanted to do a beef brisket.
Okay.
And from what I understand, according to what Arby's says anyways, is you have to smoke it for 13 hours.
Yes, always follow Arby's, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something before Bruce starts in, because I feel Chef is wanting in here. As the boy from Texas, smoked brisket is religion. It is it is an amazing thing in my life, and I can barely eat it when it's not good, which is why Bruce had to learn to make it good. So all right.
So
all
let
right.
me so ask you about the smoker you got first. Is it an electric smoker, or is it like one of those Weber smokers that you're going to stock with charcoal and wood?
It's propane.
It's a propane. So that's a good answer. So what I'm going to tell you is that 13 hours maybe. You want to keep the temperature, you're doing a cold smoke, I'm assuming, so you're going to keep the temperature at about between 175 and 200 degrees. And I find when I do that, 10 hours is often enough, but the thing about briskets are the same size brisket can take 7 hours to get tender from one cow and 12 hours to get tender from another cow. So there's no way to be able to tell you it will take 10 hours, 11 hours, 12. You have to start testing it at about 9 or 10 hours. And the reason for that is, you know, animals are, their meat really reflects the way they ate, the way they lived, and more importantly, the way they died.
The amount of cortisol.
And if they had a terrible death and they had a lot of cortisol, their muscle tissues are going to be stronger. So you're going to have a long range to start testing. I hope you have a good rub recipe to put on that, because you'll want a good salty rub. And then, what kind of wood are you going to use?
Well, right now I have hickory and I have apple wood.
Yum.
I hadn't really decided which one I was going to use.
Know
I was
you
gonna fill the, usually I fill the pan with beer, although I don't know if that really makes a difference there or not as far as the keeping the moisture in there.
Yeah, I don't find that putting a liquid other than water really makes a huge difference. But you can actually start it with hickory, which is a much stronger
big
smoke flavor.
Hello, can you hear us? Did we lose you? All right, well, listen on the radio then.
So you could start with the hickory, which is a really big smoke flavor, and then for the last hour, finish it with a little apple smoke, which is a little sweeter.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you could play with the different smokes because they will add different flavors.
On our charcoal grill, we've been using cherry wood the last couple of times, and that's interesting, too.
No, cherry's a wonderful flavor.
It has a slightly sweet smoke.
Yeah,
it does.
All right, let's go over to line one, and John in Hyde Park. John, you're on.
You know, I've heard that bourbon and ham water is a pretty good cocktail.
Yeah, so, this is what I'm talking about.
Is this shaken or stirred?
Stirred, if you're not going to put any citrus juice in it, of course. Hey, Ray, it's John Fisher.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. So I have a question. You were talking about another brand of country hams, and how do you feel about Alan Benton's products?
I don't know who Alan Benton is.
Tell us about him, because I don't know who he is.
Well, he's a real favorite of Chef Chang down at Momofuku.
No, I don't know. I went to a series of Kentucky makers in research for the trip, and Nancy Newsom was head and shoulders the most outrageous thing I'd ever made. In fact, when I arrived at Nancy Newsom's, the Lee brothers, who write for the New York Times, had been there the week before. And I got out of the car. She came out of her store in her long mink coat. She stood there on the sidewalk looking at me, and she said to me, "Please don't be odd." And I looked at her, and I thought, "Ma'am, I don't think I'm odd." She said, "Well, last week the Lee brothers was here with me, and they got down on the ground and kissed my hand. They're odd. Please don't be odd."
That was the pot calling the kettle black.
I said, "No, ma'am, I swear I will not kiss you at all today." So
things you learn on this program. By the way,
I don't know anything about it, so I'm thrilled to know something about this Benton.
It's Benton. I think he's Kentucky also, and he does other smoking and curing as well.
By the way, John Fisher is a big muckety muck at CIA.
He
knows from mixed drinks.
Small muck.
Small
muck.
So, John, you've had this ham. You know about this ham.
I've tasted it. I've had his bacons also, and they're pretty tasty. But I haven't had mink-clad Newsom's hams yet, though. So
well, Nancy's got a new product out, just so you want to know, where she puts a frozen ham sandwich in a solar packet, and you can put it on your dashboard, and the sun will heat it as you drive.
Well, that's perfect. That's a
that's
southern thing.
That's not odd at all.
No, not at all. In fact, we ought to do a program on, you know, long-haul trucking. You wrap up the turkey in the foil.
But,
you put it in the engine compartment.
She's,
you drive 300 miles.
She's literally got one of those little solar panels in each packet, little tiny solar.
That's your next book.
Oh, yeah.
Solar panel cooking.
Hey, John, what are you drinking lately, man?
Oh, gosh.
Bourbon and ham water.
Beer because of the brewery at the school. So.
How is that? I have not had the beer yet.
It's pretty darn tasty. We hired a local brewer named Hutch Kugelman.
Yeah.
And he's doing a great job down there. We have a 7-barrel brewery on campus now.
Fantastic.
And we have an IPA that's an East Coast style and a traditional Belgian wit. And then every semester the students come up with a project and they do a beer as a graduation project.
All right, man. So it's ham beer next time.
Oh man, John, can we come
we'll
down
do
for a tasting? I want a beer tasting.
John will come up and do a show one of these days. Hey John, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Gina. Gina in Hurley, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I actually have two ham questions.
Okay.
One is kind of I don't understand it. You buy a ham, you put it in the oven. It's in the oven at 300 degrees, whatever temperature, for hours and hours, and it's still cold.
You sure
it
your oven's working?
Me. It seems like, yes, it just seems like it takes forever and ever to cook. But actually, my main question was I had somebody that made a ham in a crock pot, and it was so good. It was very tender, fell apart, very tender. And I'm going to try that for Easter. And I'm wondering if you have any tips.
Well,
I think my family is nervous.
All right, let's answer the second question first. Any meat you put in the crock pot is going to come out falling apart tender. That
Which
is
the
great. Joy okay. of the crock pot. In fact, Mark and I wrote the Great American Slow Cooker book. And I believe we do have some ham recipes in that book.
Me too.
And I don't have that book in front of me, but I can I can ask you this. What kind of ham do you plan on using, a fresh ham or a smoked ham?
It's not smoked.
Okay, so it's a fresh ham. So you basically have the beautiful giant pork roast.
I have it right here.
Oh, you have the ham.
I can hear the grocery package.
Okay.
Oh.
It is a fully cooked, semi-boneless, half a ham.
Okay, so that
lower,
is going to that is
to be lower sodium.
That is going to be a smoked ham.
Okay.
It is smoked.
That'll be if it's a fully cooked. You basically by putting that in the crock pot, you are going to be doing it. All you have to do is warm this ham up. This ham has to get to 150 degrees for safety, and after that, it's good to eat. So if you did it in your oven, then you could slice it by putting it in the crock pot. You're going to make it fall apart tender. But remember that the crock pot will also make moisture come out of any meat. So you'll end up with a lot of liquid. That liquid's going to become very salty because it's coming out of the ham. So you might want to, not consider braising it in any kind of sauce in the crock pot because it may become too salty. But you could still put some kind of a glaze on it. And I wouldn't put any other liquid in the crock pot. I might consider putting one of those marmalade and bourbon kind of glazes over it and just set it in the crock pot and turn the crock pot on low and let it go 6 hours until it's falling off the bone.
Or something like Dijon mustard, right?
Yep, Dijon mustard and brown sugar.
That's maybe not.
Why don't you just pour a couple of bottles of Dr. Pepper in there?
That's too liquidy for
this,
and it's going to give off liquid. And then in terms of your ham.
We have dessert, too.
In terms of your ham not getting cooked when you put it in the oven, I'm not sure what that's about. There was a line from the old women, the movie The Women from like 1939, where Joan Crawford says to her housekeeper,
Crystal Allen.
She says, you put a cold lamb chop in a hot oven, what's to keep it from getting cooked? Well, it's kind of the same theory with your ham. You put your cold ham in a hot oven, it should actually get cooked. I'm not sure.
It just seems like it takes forever.
Well, it does take a long time.
It takes a long time to get it up to
150
degrees. It's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, Gina.
All right,
I'm a big crock pot fan myself, so let me know how you did.
Yeah, we're hoping for the best here.
Good luck. Enough.
That's great. Now, you guys wrote a book about pressure cookers.
We
can you
did,
ever put a ham in a pressure cooker and explode the thing?
No.
Stop
Don't you
it,
remember
Ray.
Our conversation last October?
Listen, I barely remember yesterday's show, all right?
We were here talking about pressure cookers. They can't explode anymore.
Right. I apologize.
They're all safe and new and
that's
wonderful.
Right. But the ham can explode, right?
Well,
yeah, ratchet
totally.
The pressure up there.
I actually had a hard-boiled egg explode on me the other day. He asked me to make egg salad for lunch, and and then he goes, what was that? Like an egg just exploded. Oh. It was fascinating.
That's impressive. Well, you write a book about that. It'll be your next book.
Yeah.
Exploding eggs.
Yeah.
There you go.
Excellent.
Coming up on QVC. what do you do afterwards when you have 8 pounds of ham left? What's a good way to use it? Now, my grandmother used to make what she just called ham spread, and it was very simple.
In the food processor, like deviled ham.
Boiled egg, some relish.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things to do with leftover ham is a recipe inspired by French country cooking called potato sarlades. And you take the ham and you bake chunks of it in the oven in a roasting pan with potatoes and garlic and parsley and lots of pepper. And you just have this, it's almost like making hash browns. In the oven.
Well, I can just skip right to that.
And, of course, you cannot, no one can ever, ever miss the treat, anybody in the South knows, of dicing up leftover ham and putting it in mac and cheese. It's just got to go in mac and
cheese. Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. Let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, I have a cooker that's called a Romatov cooker.
Oh, yeah, one of those clay pots, yeah.
Yeah, it's not glazed. There's another kind called a Schlimmertopf, which is glazed.
Yeah,
you have
the unglazed, and you have to soak it.
I usually do chicken and vegetables in it, and you put it in the oven for an hour and a half and forget about it, everything comes out well. With a ham, is there anything that you could suggest that might be particular to the ham that would be different than, say, using a chicken or roast beef or something like that?
Well, I would. And one of the things is that what I like about an oven-roasted ham is the crunchy, crispy skin and the fat getting all incredibly browned and rendering out. And that's not going to happen quite as much as I would like if I used one of those clay roasters. That said, you could still do it. I know you have to soak those in water for about an hour before you use them. Isn't that right?
It says 20 minutes. I usually eat half an hour, something like that. Yeah.
And part of that is for them to keep infusing moisture back inside and keeping your meat moist. You have no problem keeping a ham moist, especially if it's one of those pre-cooked, smoked hams like the caller before was talking about. If it's a fresh ham, well, that's a whole other story, because then you could treat it almost like any pork roast or roast beef that you're going to consider using.
Yep.
Is the ham you're going to do
a fresh ham? Then.
A fresh. I would, if you're going to go to the trouble of using your wonderful clay roasting pan, I would go and find myself a fresh ham. And
you could tell Ray there that
I'm listening.
It's the kind of thing that when you put it in the oven, you put your vegetables and stuff in. If you have company coming, you just turn the heat down a little bit, and you can let it sit for 2 hours.
Nice.
Yeah, it's quite a nice tool. I would definitely look for a fresh ham with your vegetables and that. That'll make a fantastic dinner.
That presupposes the fact that we would have company, which, of course, we wouldn't. Hey, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend, Mark.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. All right, so we're wrapping up here on the big program. Bruce and Mark, what's the website?
It's bruceandmark.com.
Bruceandmark.com. What can we find there?
What you'll find there are links to everything we do, from our TV appearances to all of my knitting work. In case you didn't know, I am a published knitting author.
That.
Yeah.
All right, you're a published knitting author. You've written 30 cookbooks. All right. This is one of those things where you have a franchise and you have about 17 people working at minimum wage writing stuff for you, right?
Nah. And Mark and I have done a number of Craftsy classes. And if you're not familiar with Craftsy, it's a website you can go to and you could buy classes, like old-fashioned PBS classes, where you get 7 hours, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 7 classes on a particular subject.
You
We've done them on pressure cookers.
Oh, cool.
I've done one on knitting.
And you can also find out on our website that I don't just write cookbooks. I also teach Dante and Chaucer in
You're
my
kidding
other
me.
Life. So I have all kinds of things going on.
So
and you can also get to our our podcast. Which
so you can have you bring the ham to Canterbury. And
there you go.
You write a tale about
there
it.
There you go.
So it's all good. Well, this was exciting. And great to have you guys here.
Thank
and
you.
The blog, the podcast, how often do you guys update
Twice
that?
A week, every
Twice
Tuesday and every Friday,
cooking
with Bruce and Mark.
All right, guys, thanks for being here. Thanks to Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. Thanks to everybody who called in today. a fun show. Good luck with the hindquarters, everyone. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. The Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting a range of programming for the arts and community. TheLinda.org. And Sutter Meats, King Street, Northampton, providing fresh local pasture-raised beef, pork, and lamb. Additional house-made items include rotisserie chickens, bone broths, bacon jam, and handmade sausages. SutterMeats.com. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again, everyone. Have a lovely weekend. And thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy, our producer, Jessica Blaustein, Marshall Barb King answered the calls. Alan will be back here on Monday for a Medical Monday. Once again, have a great weekend.